This is a story that I really don't enjoy telling, don't enjoy reading. Wish that I had some magic advice for you on how to teach this to children. And I don't. I really don't. I don't know. I would suspect, Freddie's in here and an elder now, and then Charles, former elder, someone whose opinion I greatly respect. But I would go so far as to say this is a story that for small children you could just leave out. Just omit it. I'm not normally in favor of omitting it, of omitting any story from the Bible, but this story is one. You know, the Bible is a book written for adults. It is. Now, there happen to be some things in there that are, I mean, the Christian religion is a grown-up religion. That's what it is. It's for people who are willing to challenge themselves to be better and to do better and to think harder and to accept the consequences of the very difficult things the Bible has to say. And also to enjoy the benefits of, you know, as Jesus said, you know, my burden is light. But, you know, the thing with that is you take up your cross and follow Him, and His yoke is easy and His burden is light. This story is one that again, I think that for the very youngest of children, and I don't know what age, maybe up through second to maybe even fourth grade, you may consider omitting or at least taking caution with how you tell the story. And again, I would take input because my experience teaching children that age is my own. That's really the only experience I have is my own who are now in second grade. And I was thinking of how I would teach this, you know, to my children, my own children. And I don't have an easy answer for that. It's a difficult story. But, you know, like I say, on the other hand, I am conflicted. I'm torn. Because on the other hand, it is a story that the Bible includes. And I suppose what I'm getting at is that maybe not everything is appropriate for all ages that is in the text. And this might be one of those that may not be. I don't know. But again, I'm willing to take advice. That's me soliciting anyone to give any public comment on that if the advice I've given is bad. But, you know, I think the upper elementary, the junior high age kids, high school age kids, definitely, you can tell the story basically, you know, as it's written. Just tell it to them. The thing is that's one of the things about the Bible is that it shows things as ugly as they are. It just tells that they happen. Doesn't give God's approval on any of these things, but it does reveal them for us, and it gives us some idea of just how bad things got in Israel in just a very, very short time. If you'll notice in chapter 19, we're going to begin in Judges 19, and we'll be covering through the end of the book, and then we have one more story in the book of Judges beyond this one, and then we'll spend the rest of the time with review. But you'll notice in chapter 19, verse 1, came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel. And then the book closes, this story closes, pointing out that again, and then adding the comment that we saw earlier, that every man did what was right in his own eyes as a result of that, no king in Israel. So just a note about the timing of this story. If you'll notice over in Judges chapter 20 and verse 28, and we'll get there when it comes in turn, but in Judges chapter 20 and notice verse 28, we see a character there that we know. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar. Okay? Do you see that? Phinehas, the son of Eleazar. So, and I don't take this to mean, as we saw in the last story, that it was perhaps, you know, son, meaning a descendant of, but not a direct son. You know, maybe grandson, great-grandson, great-great-grandson. In this case, we've met Phinehas, right? We've met Phinehas. You remember when we met Phinehas in the story? Maybe not this quarter, but I guess we did run across Phinehas this quarter. That's right. But Phinehas is the son of Eleazar, who is the son of Aaron, right? So this is Phinehas so this would have been very, very early in the period of the Judges, very soon after the invasion and conquest. is when this story would have happened. Because otherwise, you know, Phinehas would have just been too old for that to have happened. So again, as I was going through this story, one of the things that I was trying to do was come up with one character that I could pick out as, this is the good guy in this story. And, you know, the best I could do, Phinehas, the Bible doesn't tell us anything bad about Phinehas in this story. There's only just a quick mention of Phinehas. And Phinehas happens to be a character that I like for some of the things he did earlier. And then the best I could do beyond Phinehas is the father of the concubine. I don't read that he did anything too terribly out of hand either. So those are really the only two characters I could pick out as, okay. But the others, they all really did some pretty awful things in this story. And not all of them did awful things all the time. That's certainly not the case. I mean, the Levite, though he displayed some cowardice, he does display some good qualities as well. And the same is true of the old man from Ephraim. Though he does show some cowardice, and he does display some good qualities as well. So there are some, you know, characters that are mixed in that. So that's a little bit of the timing. Definitely happened earlier in the period of the judges. We're told that that in verse 1, there was a certain Levite, chapter 19, verse 1, certain Levite staying in the remote mountains of Ephraim. So the remote mountains, so the hill country, you know, would have been this ridge flowing just west of the Jordan, that ridge that kind of runs along parallel to the Jordan. This is where the most rugged of the mountains would have been, right? And then Shiloh, you remember Shiloh is where the tabernacle was in the days of the judges up until the Philistines took the ark away, right? And I would take it the far reaches would be just north of Shiloh, somewhere just outside of Shiloh. And in fact, when we get a little bit more into the story, as he's on his way back home, you know, he mentions that Shiloh is the place where he's going, to the house of God there in Shiloh. So that's, I take it that he lived somewhere maybe north of Shiloh in the far, close to the border of Ephraim and Manasseh there in the hill country. But his concubine was from Bethlehem, Judah. Okay? So this, we know that town and that from a number of places in the Bible story. But I take it that he was from up here, but his concubine was from here. So what happened is that the concubine was unfaithful to him. And after that unfaithfulness, she went to be went to her father's home in Bethlehem, which is where she was from. And so again, another kind of a good quality of the Levite is that he went back, and the Bible says he went back, you know, to speak kindly to her, to take her to heart. So I don't take it that he went back to reclaim her as a possession or to deal harshly with her at all. I think the Bible indicates quite the opposite of that, is that he was willing to forgive her and take her back for her unfaithfulness. So he went there to see her and to be kind to her. And when he got there, there at Bethlehem, he traveled there, she brought him into her father's home. And her father was very happy to see him, very happy to meet him, and rejoiced, and basically threw a three-day feast for him. And they ate and drank there in her father's house for 3 days. One thing you may have to do as you're teaching this story is you may have to explain what a concubine is to some of the children. Now, they will have come across this back in the stories in Genesis, right? Because remember that we met Hagar in Genesis, Abraham's concubine. So they may, but that will have been, for some of the really young ones, right? That will have been a long enough ago that they may have forgotten. So you may explain that it was that in those days men had more than one wife, and that this was not really a wife, didn't have all the privileges of a wife, and certainly the children of a concubine didn't have all the privileges of a children of a wife, but like a second-class wife would be what a concubine is. But he goes and meets her. There's a 3-day feast. On the fourth day, the Levite's ready to pack up, leave, and go home. But the father of the concubine says, wait, just eat with me another day. Take your fill before you go and hit the road. And so he stayed and they ate and they drank. And then it got to be later in the day. And the father-in-law said, you don't want to leave this late in the day. Go ahead, stay one more night with me. And then you can go on your way early in the morning. So they stayed that day. So he agreed, stayed that night. And then on the fourth day he was there. He spent the night there the fourth day. And then on the fifth day, he woke up, was ready to leave early in the morning. And again, his father-in-law said, wait a minute, don't go just yet. Stay with us. Stay and eat before you leave, at least. So they stayed and he stayed and ate. And then it got to be close to the afternoon. And the father said, well, look, it's late in the day. Why don't you just go ahead and stay one more night? Then you can leave in the morning. And you may have experienced something like this if you've gone to visit with family, right? They don't really want you to leave when it comes time to leave. But this time, I gather maybe the Levite was seeing a pattern developing here. And he said, no, I'm leaving. So he left, and it was close to afternoon when he left on the fifth day. And so as he departed on the fifth day, they departed Bethlehem. And as they were leaving, it was already afternoon when they left Bethlehem. And they went towards, the Bible calls it Jebus. Remember who lived in Jerusalem? The Jebusites, right? Remember, Joshua did not, under the leadership of Joshua, Israel did not take Jerusalem. Do you remember that? We're not going to see Israel take Jerusalem in this quarter. It doesn't happen. It's actually going to be next quarter in the United Kingdom when David goes and takes Jerusalem. Okay? So this was one of those cities that they could have taken had they been faithful and obeyed God, but they allowed the Jebusites to live in that city. So Jerusalem was not far from Bethlehem. You'll see that on the map. So here they are in Bethlehem, and they leave and go up north toward Jerusalem, or Jebus, the city of the Jebusites. And the servant, so there were three people in this traveling party, the Levite, his concubine, and he brought a servant with him on this trip. And they also had a couple of donkeys as well. And so he suggested they stay in Jerusalem, but the Levite said, no, we're not going to stay in Jerusalem because we're going to go up to either Gibeah or Ramah. One of those two cities is where we're going to go because the Jebusites live in Jerusalem. And I get the feeling that he didn't think it would be safe there in Jerusalem, in the city of the Jebusites. And so he insisted that we go up to where our fellow countrymen are, in the city of either Gibeah, he suggested first. And he said, maybe we'll even make it as far as Ramah. And again, you look at the map, and I added Ramah to the map. But you'll see Gibeah here, and Ramah would have been just north of Gibeah, there near the northern part of the territory of Benjamin. So here's Ramah, and then Mizpah will come into play a little bit later in the story. So they pass Jerusalem, and when they get to Gibeah, when they get near Gibeah, the sun is setting. The sun is setting on them as they get to Gibeah. So he goes into the city and started to set up camp. One of the interesting things about this is, again, I'm looking for good things in this story. There's not much, and the Bible doesn't include this. And I don't want to, I don't want to make you think that this is a good story. The Bible includes this as an example of how bad Israel had gotten. But one of the things that I like to do as you're reading the story is you can learn a lot about the customs of that age. And this is an example where that we can learn something about the customs of this time. So he as he's going in the city, the customs in that day were that if a stranger came into the city, you were to take them into your house and feed them and take care of them. Make sure they were provided for. Hospitality was just part of life. That was what you did. You didn't have to know the person who was coming into the city, particularly if it were a fellow countryman, a fellow Israelite. Take them into your house and feed them for the night. Give them a place to stay as they're traveling. But as he comes into Gibeah, no one would do this for him. No one would. And so he starts to set up camp. And he set up camp in the street there in the city because no one invited him in. So at least we know that Gibeah is an unfriendly city. At the least, not hospitable. So later on, after the sun had set, it was already dark, there was an old man who actually was from Ephraim, but he was staying there in Gibeah, and he was on his way back home from the fields. And so he came through the city, and he saw the Levite and his servant and his concubine set up camp in the city. And he said, "No, don't do this. I insist that you come home and come home with me." And again, the dialogue there I find very interesting because it gives us insight into the customs of that day. Because the Levite says, "Nobody invited me in, but you know, I have hay and fodder for my donkeys. I have enough bread and wine for myself. I won't be any inconvenience. Just need a place to stay. I can take care of all my company here." And the man from Ephraim says, "No, come on into my house. I insist. And I'll feed your donkeys. I'll feed you." And that kind of back and forth hospitality that went on there, I just find very interesting how that he says, "I'll take care of myself." And they say, and the old man from Ephraim says, "No, I'll take care of you." And we do that much the same today, right? If you ever do something nice for someone, they'll want to repay you. What do you say? "No, keep it. No, keep it." So that kind of thing, I get, is what was going on here. They were showing kindness to one another. And the old man from Ephraim was wanted him to stay. And when he took him into his house, the text tells us that the old man from Ephraim fed his donkeys and fed his company as well. So he did take care of them, showed hospitality. And typically that's what happens, isn't it? We'll say, "No, don't do that for me." But we end up accepting the gift anyway. That's how. So just a good bit of insight into the customs of that day. So he invited him into his house. And again, here's the map just showing, you know, he thought he might be able to make it to Ramah, but he didn't. So he stayed in Gibeah. Because he was there at sunset, and he sets up camp in the street, and the old man from Ephraim comes in after dark to invite him into his house. So as he was entertaining the Levite, the old man was entertaining the Levite, what happened is some very wicked men from the city. Now I want to just take a quick look at that translation there. And I'm looking at verses, beginning at about verse 22 of chapter 19. As they were enjoying themselves, suddenly certain men of the city, perverted men. Does someone have a different translation there? Worthless fellows? Okay. Sons of Belial. Okay. So we've seen that idea of worthless fellows. We've seen that before, and it's a different original translation. We saw that with like Jephthah, and you know, he hired these worthless fellows. This is not the same idea. This is sons of Belial is what this is. So the text points out that these were wicked men. Okay, these weren't just kind of rough around the edges, you know, maybe poor men looking for some way to provide for themselves. These were sons of Belial. These were evil men, wicked men. Okay? So be sure to kind of note that the Bible points out that these were wicked men, sorry men. And so they came around, they came to the city and began knocking on his door. I read a commentary that suggested that the word there indicates that it became more and more frequent as he was knocking on the door. So again, more and more insistent as they're knocking on the door. And their request that they made of the old man from Ephraim, whose house they were at, is the same as those men in Sodom. They requested, "This visitor you have, give him to us that we may know him," the text says. And so they wanted to commit sexual immorality, sodomy, with the man in that house. And the old man just was appalled, really, by that request. And was not willing to give in to that in the least. And so what he did is about as cowardly of an act, and it's very similar to what Lot did in his day as well. In the there's just some parallel here between Gibeah, a city in, you know, in God's nation, in God's among God's people, Gibeah is so far gone in certain ways that they're much like Sodom in the days before. And that's the parallels are striking here. So the old man offered his daughter and then also offered the concubine, the Levite's concubine, not and said, "Take my daughter, take this concubine, but don't do this wickedness. Don't take this man." And the men refused the offer of his daughter. The Levite then, and the text, I wasn't really able to determine that did the Levite, I mean, I gather the Levite had some consent here, but the old man offered the concubine. They took the concubine. They accepted that. And they took her out and raped her and abused her all night long until the morning. Then as the sun began to rise, they let her go. But they had abused her so badly that really she was just a mess. And she left and made her way back to the house. And when she got to the house, she fell at the threshold of the door. And her hands were there at the threshold of the door. And as the Levite wakes up, now one just quick comment. The men in this house are absolute, just, I don't know what to say other than cowards. That's really all I know to say about that. To do that and offer them and give consent to offer her up. I don't know what else to say about that. I don't know what other options they had because, you know, had they... you know, had he gone out himself, that would have been equally as evil a thing. And perhaps they would have taken both him and her. I don't really know. But it's just an awful, awful situation. And nothing good that I can say about this situation at all. So as he gets up in the morning and he sees her, she made her way back to the door. And as he was leaving, he told her to get up. Up now, let's go. Very callous, I take it. Get up, let's go. Time to go. But she didn't respond at all. And the reason she didn't respond is that she was dead. They had abused her so badly that she died by the time that it was time for the Levite to leave. And he was outraged by this, as he should have been. And so what he did is another kind of disgusting thing. But he takes her body and he cuts it into 12 pieces. And the text doesn't say that he sent pieces to every tribe in Israel. That's not exactly what the text says. But it says he cut it into 12 pieces and sent it throughout all the borders of Israel. So I kind of deduce that he may have sent one piece to each tribe. But the text doesn't explicitly say that. So he took her body with a knife and cut it into pieces and... he sent it out throughout all the borders of Israel. And everyone who saw it said, "There has never been such a thing to have been done in Israel since we came up from Egypt. Nothing this badly has been done. So let's come together and figure out what we're going to do about this." They were not... they saw... and you don't know if they could tell by the pieces of the body or just the fact that, you know, a piece of a dead body was sent to them. You don't really know exactly what incited them to come together. But verse 30 says, "Consider it, confer, and speak up." In other words, let's take action, is what the entire tribe of Israel said. So Israel does respond. So all of Israel, and the text makes it clear that it is all of Israel except Benjamin. It is from Dan to Beersheba. And then it goes on to say, even Gilead. So Dan to Beersheba, even Gilead, all came together at Mizpah. So again, let's take a quick look at where Mizpah is. So here's Mizpah, right there on the border of Ephraim and Benjamin. Okay? So they're right next to the territory of Benjamin, not very far from Ramah, and again, not very far from Gibeah, where this act we just read about had taken place. Right? They gathered together at Mizpah, 400,000 soldiers, men of war, were gathered there at Mizpah. And Benjamin knew that all Israel had come together there at Mizpah. And so they asked, they went in and asked, what had happened to this body that they had received. Tell us the story. What happened? So the Levite tells the story. He tells what had happened, how that he went to stay in Gibeah, and that men came wanting to kill him, but instead they took his concubine and they abused her and killed her, and now he's sent the body out to all Israel to see if he can get some help to do something about this. So when Israel heard the Levite's story about that, give advice, give your counsel, chapter 20 and verse 7. So they arose and they said, none of us are going to go back. And they made a couple of other vows while they were here at Mizpah that we'll get to in a few minutes. A couple of other vows in the next chapter. So they gather together and they decide they're going to gather an army and go against Benjamin by lot. 10 of 100, 100 of 1,000, and so forth. They're going to go up to against Benjamin by lot. So they went into the city of Gibeah, and they told Benjamin, just turn over the men who did this thing. Turn them over to us, we'll put them to death, and we'll get rid of the evil that's in Israel. Now that's exactly what should have happened. That's what should have happened. Those men should have been put to death. And there were more. There was more than just the one witness, right? There were, they had the Levite, you had the man from Ephraim, and then you had his servant. They were all witnesses of what had happened. They had ample cause to take these men, put them to death. And that's what should have happened, and the story would have ended much better than it did if they had just done that. It still would have been an awful story, but you would have seen justice carried out. So the men of Benjamin, though, they refused. They would not do it, and they decided they'd go to war. They refused to do it and decided to go to war. Now, absolutely. That would have been according to the law. The law required that. So they asked what was within the law, and Benjamin refused. And you can tell that at this time, Benjamin doesn't have a lot of concern for the law, I would take it. Yeah. So Israel had 400,000 gathered there at Mizpah. Benjamin had 26,000. I think it said, the text actually says 26,100, maybe. Or maybe it's later on they killed 25,100. So in addition to this, they had the men of Gibeah, which was about 700 men in Gibeah. And then in addition to that, they had 700 left-handed men, and who were very skilled slingers. So they could sling a stone, and the text says, at a hair's breadth. So very accurate left-handed slingers, 700 of those men. So, and I take it that it's 26,000 plus 700 plus 700. So Israel, they go up to Bethel. Let's see, do I have a map? No, go back to this map. And Bethel is right up here in the hill country of Ephraim. So Israel goes up to Bethel. Now Shiloh would have been a little farther north of there. So they go up to Bethel and they ask God, and God said, they said, who shall go first? And should we go against Benjamin? And who shall go first? And God said, yes, Judah will lead the way. So they gather together, they go to battle against Benjamin, and it's disastrous. It's awful. 22,000 Israelites died that day. 2,000 as they're fighting, and again, for an army of 400,000 versus 26,000, and 22,000 died that day. And they went back, and they were obviously just devastated, distraught. And so they go back. Now, one thing I'd like to point out in the text there is if you'll notice verse 18, then the children of Israel, and this is in chapter 20, arose and went up to the house of God to inquire of God. And they said, which of us shall go up first to the battle against the children of Benjamin? Then Jehovah, the Lord, said Judah first. But notice who they inquired of in verse 18. They inquired of God. Okay? No one has a translation that has Lord, all caps, or Jehovah there, right? Now it does when in the answer, but who did they ask? So, and Bob points out in his book that perhaps the reason why God allowed this 22,000 is because The first time, they're just kind of seeking divine guidance. It's not as if they're calling on the Lord, calling on Jehovah, the one and only living true God. It's Elohim is the word that's translated there. So, kind of seeking divine guidance, not really seeking Jehovah, the one God of Israel. And so God tells them to go first, that Judah should go first. The other thing is, it says they went up to the house of God. I don't take it that the tabernacle was there in Bethel at this time. House of God, do you know that that's just what Bethel means? The name Bethel means house of God. So when it says they went up to the house of God, that'd be similar to saying they went up to Bethel, the name of the city. Okay. So I don't take this to mean that, because where was the tabernacle at this time? Shiloh. Okay. In Shiloh. Now, a little bit later on, we're going to see that Phinehas and the Ark are there at Bethel. But I don't see really, maybe the tabernacle did move to Bethel temporarily, but I don't know. I don't know. And if so, it was just for a brief time that the tabernacle moved to Bethel. And it could be that they just went to get the Ark to kind of seek some help for this battle. We've seen that, we saw them do that again. You know, it was much later in history, but we did see that happen also against the Philistines. So Israel then, the second time, they asked Jehovah. Okay? They asked Jehovah the second time, should we go again? And notice verse 23, they wept before the Lord until evening and now asked counsel of the Lord. So this time, in verse 23, the word there is Jehovah or the Lord. Okay? So they're seeking, it seems as if they're seeking Jehovah. And the Lord said, go against him. So they do. They go against Benjamin again on the second day. And this time, not quite as bad. 18,000 are killed. Still a bad day, right? They lose this second battle. And so after this, they go back. And the interesting thing is, now they're going to fast. And they're going to offer sacrifices. And here's where we meet Phinehas. And they offer the burnt offerings and peace offerings. And again, this is the best explanation I can give for why God tells them to go up and they're defeated, is that not until the third time of seeking God's counsel did they even think to really do it and offer sacrifices and take it very seriously. So they go up against Benjamin the third time. They wept, fasted, offered sacrifices. Jehovah says, and this time, the other times Jehovah just said, go. This time he says, go and I will deliver them. Okay? So they went, they attacked Benjamin, and they had set up an ambush. And so as they attacked, they then fled, and it looked just like the other days. And Benjamin began following after them, and it says 30 men died in this battle. So that's quite a bit different from 22,000, 18,000, now 30 men died in this day. And Benjamin thinks they're winning, but there's an ambush, okay, on the plain of Geba, about to go into the city of Gibeah. So they flee out, and then the ambush goes into the city of Gibeah, strikes it down, and they had set up a sign that when you see smoke rising up from the city, then the ambush has happened, you can turn around and go after them. So they turned around and went after the Benjamites, and Israel killed 25,000 of Benjamin that day, of the men of Benjamin that day. 25,000. They killed 18,000 right here in this battle of the ambush. And then along the road they killed 5,000. And then a little while later they killed 2,000 more. So 25,000. And there were 600 of the men of Benjamin that escaped to a place called the Rock of Rimmon. Now, this is getting on into chapter 21 now. And so what's happened is they've got a problem. Israel, probably because of the two, of what had happened with the story, and then their Benjamin's refusal, the battle, the killing of 22,000, the killing of 18,000, then the killing of 30 on the third day. Israel, it seems as if they've turned this from a punitive thing to an absolute revenge, and they nearly wipe out the entire tribe of Benjamin. Only 600 of the men of Benjamin have escaped, and they've totally wiped out the tribe. There's none of them left. And so what had happened is, while they were at Mizpah, They made a couple of oaths. One of the oaths that they made was, none of us here will give our daughters to Benjamin. We will not do it because of what has happened. And so that was one of the oaths. And so Israel cried out to Jehovah, offered sacrifices because they feared losing a tribe. The second oath they had made is that whoever didn't come to Mizpah to go out against Benjamin for what Benjamin had done, all the people of that place would be killed. So they took a census and figured out that, the city of Jabesh-Gilead. The city of Jabesh-Gilead did not come to Mizpah. So they took 12,000 soldiers and they went, took those 12,000 to make war with Jabesh-Gilead. So they went over to the city of Jabesh-Gilead and they made war against that city. And they were commanded to kill. This is how they're going to get around this oath and preserve the tribe. They told them to kill all of the men and all of the married women in the city of Jabesh-Gilead. And so they did. They wiped out the city of Jabesh-Gilead. And what they found were 400 young virgins in the city. So they captured them and took them back. And they were going to give them to those 600 men who were hiding in Benjamin. They were hiding there for 4 months. And they were going to give them these daughters from Jabesh-Gilead as wives for them to take so that they could preserve the tribe of Benjamin. But you'll notice that there's 400 and 600. So not quite enough. So they need to do a little bit more scheming. And this is what they do. It's scheming. Again, I was just looking for something. There's just nothing good here in this. In this whole story, just very few little nuggets of good. So what the plan was for the remaining men of Benjamin, those who didn't get a wife of those 400, every year, and remember we learned this with Samuel, every year they would go up to Shiloh to worship God. And occasionally what would happen, and if you take a quick look at the map, the Bible describes that on the way from Bethel to, or actually on the way up to Shiloh, along the way to Bethel, the feast would happen here at Shiloh, and so along the way, sometimes the daughters from that feast, that annual feast to God, would come out and dance, and so what the men of Benjamin were to do was to wait, and when those daughters came out to dance, they would go and capture them and make them their wives. Capture them, take them back to Benjamin very quickly, take them back to their territory, make them their wives. And the way this was kind of a workaround was, you see, when the fathers of those daughters come and complain to us, we'll say, you didn't give them to Benjamin, right? Benjamin took them. Let them go so that Benjamin can be preserved. You've not violated your oath. You see how they're just scheming. So it's almost as if they were serious about the oath and that they didn't want to break it, in a very willful fashion, but they were looking for a way around the oath that they had made. And so that's what they did. When the fathers complained, they'd say, look, you didn't give your daughters to Benjamin. Just kind of, they took them, so that was their way around the oath to preserve the tribe of Benjamin. And so they departed from there, and every man went to his inheritance. And then verse 25, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And I would say that summarizes particularly the last two stories we've seen in the book of Judges. People just did whatever they thought was right. Or not whatever they thought was right, whatever they wanted to do would be more like what was right in their own eyes. Questions? Thoughts? I'm glad that's over. Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. The difference being, the key difference being is that, they actually, the men of Sodom were restrained by God. They were stricken with blindness and God didn't allow that. In this case, they put out the concubines, so it's a little more graphic in that. Yeah, but you're right. The desires, the lust, the ugliness of the men of the city is equivalent. Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah.
The
And she's raped as well. And that's a difficult concept for children to get at. You know, in the concept of Sodom, you know they wanted to do something to the man that was really, really wicked, and you know, treat a man like he was a wife. You know, you can say things like that. But with this case, you know, they actually forced themselves on her and raped her, and that to me is where that I have a hard time thinking of how do you explain that to children. If you handle that subject gingerly, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience teaching children, but I would have a difficult time explaining that story to. But in Sodom, you can almost mask that by saying they wanted to do some very wicked things. And I suppose you could say, and they did very wicked things to the daughter. Yeah. She died. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be one way to handle that. Yeah, your comments very much appreciated. Yeah, you wouldn't have to explain what they did. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Your input is very much appreciated there. Any other thoughts on that? Yeah, exactly. You'll skip that for little ones, huh? Yeah. 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 No, are you okay? Yeah. 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 Yeah.